Hello, this is another Celtic Football Fans podcast and people behind CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Brady and this week I'm going to be joined by Mr. Stephen Ray.
People might say that I should strive for more, but I'm so happy I can see the fine things happening here today.
Well, last week we recorded a podcast saying if we just win this game at the weekend, we are champions. And this week we recorded a podcast saying if we just win this week game at the weekend, we are champions. Hopefully this week will be the weekend that we do that because, of course, we are playing the new Rangers. And what better than the supporters of the old Rangers to once again get their noses rubbed into it. So I decided to speak to Stephen Ray, formerly of Rock and Roars podcast, getting back on just for a one-to-one this week to discuss the disappointment of the Hibs game and look forward to the Celtic Rangers game coming up this weekend. We also have some exclusive transfer gossip that everybody else is talking about, so we thought we'd talk about it as well and stick an exclusive tag on it. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, with him, Stephen. So I'm joined now by Stephen Ray. How are you doing, Stephen?
I'm good, yourself?
I'm excellent, thanks. I just hope that I'm now not going to have like three of these podcasts in a row where I say, so we're recording the podcast because if we win on at the weekend, we can be champions.
Yeah.
I don't know, what season does this remind you of? Does it remind you of any season in particular?
Yeah, I was actually thinking about it the day. It kind of reminds me of the season Lennon made the last 16. And the reason I say that is I think we actually won that week by on 75 points.
Right.
Which is, I think, the lowest that any team had won it for a long, long time. I think probably going back as far as the time where it was 2 points for a win.
Right.
I just think that season or that week season kind of went unnoticed because we'd done so well in Europe and we'd played in the Champions League in March. So by the time we get pumped off Juventus, you know, we were into the sort of semi-final of the Scottish Cup and, you know, in the last sort of six or seven games of the league. So it kind of reminds me a wee bit of that season where, you know, in the Cups, doing quite well in Europe, you know, we suppose we met our objectives, but in the league it's been a wee bit up and down. So that's kind of what I think anyway.
I remember that time as well. That if at any time in a game you whinged at any point, and not in a, you know, really, I try not to personalise criticism of Celtic players, but just sometimes you can't help yourself. Someone would turn round to you and say, get off the back. I mean, or if you were criticising Lennon for the formation or the substitutions that he'd made, look what we've done in Europe.
Yeah. There's been a lot of that this season. A lot of it's been aimed at me. I'm perceived to be a quite negative on Twitter, but I just call it as I see it. I don't lie to myself, you know. I think if I look at it in two ways. There's the immediate, which is the game just passed or the last couple of games. And then there's the overall. So if you ask me, am I overall happy with things at Celtic? I would say, yeah, I'm happy. You know, we're doing really well in the Cups. We got in the Champions League. You know, we're winning the league, that kind of thing. But you've got to scrutinise, you know, individual games and individual performances. Because there's, well, we wouldn't be able to do a podcast if we didn't. You know, it'd be like, aye, everything's great, and that'd be it. You know, it's... So it's not necessarily been negative. It's just, you know,
it's just I think it's what you can see in front of your eyes.
Exactly. I'm getting really frustrated, and I said it the last time I was on that there's going to come a big game where we're just not going to turn up. Now, thankfully, it didn't come in the semi final. We blew Rangers away because that was the upcoming game at the time. But as usual with this Celtic side at the minute, it's one great performance followed by, you know, a not so great performance after. When you beat them so comprehensive in that style, in that manner, 4-0, you would think the players would kick on and go, right, let's just win out. You know, we've got five league games to go in a cup final. Let's just win out and just go into the summer on a real sort of a high. And I must admit, I was really annoyed. And I know a lot of people are saying that it doesn't matter and you're no bothered, I'd rather win it against Rangers. But I've always been of the opinion you just win it at the first opportunity you can. You know, it's just because you never know what's going to happen. I'm not saying we're going to blow the league or anything, but I just, you know, it now gives them the opportunity to say, we stopped you winning the league at your own midden against us, you know, that kind of stuff. No, I think we'll win, but that's not the point. I'd rather be getting into Sunday having been champions already. That's just my opinion.
So would I, and there is a bit, you know, I can see us winning on Sunday, beating Aberdeen, drawing with Kilmarnock, drawing with Hearts. Well, even though Hearts are shite.
I don't know if you've seen the game so far. Aberdeen are running them ragged. So, which I'm sitting watching it and I'm thinking, how did we lose 4-0 to this mob? Because I watched them last week and they were absolute dross against Rangers. Rangers were there to be gone at and they were absolute terrible.
I think the four goals that we lost to Hearts, Simonovic was at fault for three of them, wasn't he?
Probably,
he's hardly played since.
I think Lafferty was offside for his. You know, it was a close call, but I think he was offside. But nobody talks about it because the score ends up 4-0.
Oh, I know, and you know, it's also that thing that I was having a conversation with Eddie Pearson during the week and about how goals change games, and I saw Celtic by Numbers on Twitter was talking about our expected goals, and for those people who, you know, Eddie Pearson was saying doesn't quite get expected goals, but my brief summation of expected goals is if you measure 10,000 games and a chance breaks to a guy inside the 6-yard box in a certain position, he will score 9 times out of 10. So when we get a chance in that position, that is a 0.9 chance. And there's another one where the ball breaks to a guy at the edge of the box and he scores, you know, 1.5 times out of 10. So that is a 0.15 expected goals chance, which for me, when you know, it starts to make more sense than you'd X shots on target and X shots, Y shots in the game and X shots on target. But the point that Celtic by Numbers was making, that our expected goals tallied this season and last season are very similar. The difference is last season we scored more expected goals than the expected goals tally, and this season we're scoring less, which means last season we scored more goals from outside the box. That's the sort of simplest way to look at it. And goals change games. Last season, through Lennon and Strachan and Ronnie Dyla, and now this season under Brendan Rodgers, you can see that if we score a goal against a lesser team at Celtic Park inside the first 15 minutes, we go on and win the game comfortably. If we haven't scored a goal after about half an hour, under all four of those managers, play then starts to become a bit pedestrian and predictable.
Yeah.
And goals change games. And I just think at Tynecastle, we make mistakes, they score a goal, that then changes the way they play and changes the way we play. Then they score another goal through a mistake and even more dramatically changes the way both of us play.
And yeah, it was a horror show that day. But the thing I remember about that game was Griffiths should have scored at 0-0. He had a snapshot when he probably had time to take it and find the target, and he hit the side netting. You know, so I remember thinking that day after that chance, "Oh, we're going to blow them away today," and obviously it didn't happen. So I think It's been an up and down season. You know, I think some of the European results were pretty, you know, disappointing. You know, qualifying was really good this year compared to last year. But I think we had a slightly tougher group this year. But in saying that, Anderlecht were more at our level than Gladbach. We're just that wee bit more ahead of us. So, you know, it's hard to complain when you're going for a double treble, but I think there's been a lot of ups and downs in performances, and I think that's just frustrating. It doesn't feel like we've kicked on any. It feels like we've regressed a wee bit.
It does feel a bit, for me, it does feel a bit like human nature has kicked in with the players, and they've realised that they do not need to play at their best every week, and they're still going to win the league comfortably.
Yes, and Matt Viduka syndrome.
A bit of a shake-up. This season reminds me, a couple of seasons, 20 years ago, was under Wim Jansen, was the league that nobody wanted to win. I mean, yeah. I remember doing a calculation for my wedding anniversary is next Wednesday, so that's why it's particularly relevant to me, because I remember doing a calculation, and you know that way you can, we'll win that game, but I remember doing an honest calculation and thinking, right, if we draw that game, and we'll maybe lose away to them, and then we'll win that one, and then draw that one. And we were going to win the league like 3 weeks before my wedding. And I remember going to Easter Road. We played Hibs at Easter Road, and Hibs were going down.
Yeah.
And if you'd been at Easter Road that day and said one of these teams, and said to a complete stranger, one of these teams is going down, and one of them's going to win the title, you'd have had it the other way around. We were awful that day. And then one of the other seasons that comes to mind is the Strachan season, when we ended up winning it with the Nakamura free kick at Rugby Park.
Yeah.
Where for about 3-4 games in a row, it was, now if we just win comfortably this game, that's the league over.
For some reason, that season is just a complete blur. I can't really remember much about that season other than the Shakhtar Donetsk game, and me and my mate went to Milan for the last game of the group, mm-hmm. where we ended up relying on Benfica to get us through. But the rest of that season's a bit of a blur to me, and I keep seeing the Nakamura goal, but I can't remember the context and why we had to, you know, were we going to get overtaken or anything? I don't think we were.
It would be the equivalent of if we lost on Sunday
and then draw the next.
Aye. Because we were, as I say, we were 3-4. If maybe it wasn't as long as that, maybe it just felt like it. But it just, or maybe it was for a period of time if we win the next two games, and I can't remember the exact thing, but again you were thinking, oh God, we're going to not do this again, we're going to win the league, but surely we can't keep having this getting pushed out and pushed out, and then Nakamura's goal with about a minute to go at Rugby Park, and that was the title.
I think because my boy was born that year in February, I think for the next few months I was my head was elsewhere, to be honest. So I think that's maybe why I remember anniversaries and birthdays and stuff and events in my life through football.
Yeah.
So, and I get grief for it, to be honest.
So I can still, everybody seems to have forgotten, you know, because my wedding was on the day that the 5 minutes of extra time was added on, of injury time was added, and this was in the days before boards were put up and you know all that type of stuff. 5 minutes of injury time was added at Ibrox.
Yeah.
And Kamala went up the park and scored, and so I got married on the Saturday and was going on my honeymoon on the Monday so I could go to see Celtic play Dunfermline on the Sunday.
What I always remember about that Dunfermline game was, I wanted to win the league that day, but I always remember thinking to myself, how good would it be to win it on the last day at home when we're all there?
I didn't, because I wasn't going to be there. So
yeah, I just remember having that thought. But I remember was that we were 1-0 up and we were 15 minutes out, you know, and we didn't get the second. And I just remember thinking, nah, just get it over and done with, you know, just win it today and we can have a party next week. And obviously, the Falconbridge header, and you know, it was just sweaty.
Everyone seems to remember, it seems to forget that shortly after the Falconbridge header, We had a chance where it was a real scramble on, literally on the goal line.
I can't even remember. I just remember that
ball broke down and I think it hit the base of the post and then sort of went along the line, and we were diving in to try and get it over, and they were diving to stop it, and I think their keeper then picked it up.
There's been a few odd seasons where we've been successful, but not necessarily been at our best, and I definitely think this is one of them. I think if we had this season last season, you know, and if we swapped them round and it looked and it felt like we really kicked on and then had an undefeated season, then I think you would start to think, my God, we are in a real progress here. You know, drew with City twice, you know, done well in a really hard group, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think because it's came the other way about, it's felt a bit deflating somehow. But I think I'll all get forgotten about if we win the league on Sunday
and then beat
Motherwell in the final, and then, you know, all of a sudden it's became a great season again, and all these bad performances have just been forgotten about, you know. But I think we definitely need a shake up, and we definitely need improvement in some areas of the park, like we spoke about with Mark a couple of weeks ago.
So what did you think of the Hibs game on Saturday? Because it was quite an atmosphere at the ground. You know, Hibs fans were up for it because, you know, they can see they've got a chance of finishing second and certainly a chance of European football. And obviously we were there for celebrating for the title. So how did you see the game?
I wasn't under any illusions that it was going to be a cakewalk. I knew it was going to be hard. I thought to myself, this will probably be a similar type game to the game at Celtic Park, where it was 2-2. I just had that feeling about it. And you could tell they were up for it. And you knew Lennon would have them up for it. You know, he's trying to prove a point. I don't know if he's thinking further down the line, you know, if Rodgers ever moves on or anything. But I could tell early doors that, you know, we weren't quite at it and it was going to be a hard slog. We missed a great chance, you know, with Rodgick quite early.
Yeah.
You know, that was the kind of writing was slightly on the wall at that point. I didn't think we would lose. I just thought we might not win. You know, I just thought, you know, it might end up being a hard fought draw, and, you know, and then it would be a case of, yeah, let's go next week. But we just didn't get going, and I think the boy, what's the boy's name? It plays for Hibs in the middle of the park, not McGeoch and not McGinn, the other boy, Swanson. I thought he had a really good game on Brown. I thought they were really energetic, and we just couldn't cope with their energy. You know, I think McGeoch's a really good player. I think he's found his position. I mean, McGinn seems to get all the praise and all the hype, but I think McGinn's the player that makes them tick. I think he's the real player in that midfield. I don't know about yourself.
If you speak to Hibs fans, they will tell you that McGeoch's been their... They would say McGeoch's been their best player this season. He's the guy who makes the team tick.
Yeah.
And I think McGeoch's problem previously was he couldn't get a run of games in the team because I think he suffered from the same type of injury problem that Sean Maloney used to suffer from, where it was half of it was in his head.
Yeah. I thought he played well. I thought he played really well. He controlled a lot of the game. Brown just didn't look at it, and obviously I think it's came out since that he had some sort of illness. I don't know if he was meant to, if he was always going to start regardless, or whether it was just a last minute decision. But there was a point in the game that made me, I think it was there was a point in the game where Brown, I think it was a second goal actually, where Brown was left, you know, he just left the boy and the boy ran in and headed it in, whereas there was a game earlier in the season against Hibs where he actually bust vessels in his neck to get back and actually cleared a cross that was basically going to be a tap-in. He just didn't look at it. He just looked a bit slow and, you know, and the passes were going round.
I think they all did. I mean, the first goal really bugged me because Gordon's got the ball and tells Hendry to go wide, because I couldn't quite work out whether we were playing a three at the back or or whether we were playing one of the four, you know, the four at the back where Tierney goes up the left.
Yeah, if we shift across.
Because Hendry, if we were playing a four, Hendry was never seen to be far enough over. So Gordon's telling Hendry to go further wide.
plays, Hendry doesn't quite go wide enough. Gordon then plays one of his crappy chip balls to Hendry, who then is not far enough wide out and heads it towards Rogic, who lackadaisically stands there and gets dispossessed. Hibs then break forward and score.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, I think I tweeted after the game, it was four mistakes in one. You get the was it the nine iron or the sand wedge for Gordon?
Yeah.
I mean, I think at that point, I think if Hendry has a bit more experience, I think he just lets it go and just lets them have the throw and we reorganise. But he's headed it rather than up the line, he's headed it kind of back into the middle of the park, which has left Rogic on his heels. Like, as you say, he's been dispossessed. But, I mean, the boy's offside. But Boyata should have held his run back, but he kind of ran along with him. So it was quite... I mean, it's one of the ones. It was really touch and go, but he was slightly offside. But, you know, but where's Tierney in that position? He's probably further up the park.
Yep.
So because of no... I just think I was watching the Madrid game the other night, and I know we're on talking in another level of football, but what I noticed about Madrid the other night is they're no scared to kick it up the park or into Rose Ed when necessary, and we seem to lack that ability. You know, just to, we want to be a football inside, we want to pass the ball, we want to keep possession, but sometimes there's just a... Sometimes there's moments where you just have to get rid of it, you know?
But, you know, I think sometimes in some of the big domestic games, like cup finals, cup semi-finals, games against Rangers, we have done that at times.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes when we're playing teams that we think we're better than, I think that's part of the problem this season, when we're playing teams that we think we're better than, we at times try too hard to bring the ball down and play football when it's not quite in the right position to do that.
Yeah, safe in the knowledge that we won't get punished the way we would in Europe.
Aye.
But unfortunately, Hibs have got enough quality about them to punish us, you know. And that first goal was really annoying. there was so many mistakes, it was just ridiculous. And we've conceded quite a few goals that way this season, you know, for that. Gordon, he saves against Rangers in that sort of 5-6 minute spell, was outstanding. But he's got this, he just cannot pass the ball from the back. I'd rather we just go long if the option's not on. Because what I think what we are hoping for is, you know, he finds the centre back or the right back, sorry, out wide. He gets closed down, but they nod it on. And we hope that we've took out a couple of their players and then all of a sudden we're on the halfway line. But if we get it wrong, like we did, you know, we're short at the back. You know, you're basically 2-on-2, maybe more. So, like I said, I'd rather go long if there's no immediate pass at the edge of the box on ground rather than this sort of wedge chip to... Because he just can't do it. He floats it too high and it makes it too predictable.
It's too soft. I mean... I don't understand, I know obviously the balls are played to feet and stuff like that, but I would have thought there are times when he could throw it out if his kicking's not great, you know, and you can throw it at a flatter trajectory if you're throwing it out with a bit more pace to it.
Whenever he picks it up, when he's got a chance to make an early throw, he never ever makes it. He always does that kind of, I'm going to throw it, I don't throw it, and then all of a sudden everybody's in their positions and we end up back in that, you know. I don't think he's really got that about him, that kind of quick throw it. I think you used to see Peter Schmeichel do it, he'd throw it the length of the park kind of thing, you know, just for a quick breakaway. Gordon just doesn't, he's quite a cautious goalkeeper, I think. You know, he's really spectacular in his shot stopping, but I think he's quite pedestrian in his distribution.
Yeah, and that's a balance. And again, in defence of Craig Gordon, when people have talked about a replacement for Gordon, you know, we had an offer in of £4.5 million from Chelsea 15 months ago.
Yeah.
And that demonstrates to me that a better goalkeeper than Gordon would cost us more than £4.5 million.
Yeah, or was it just a case that, Chelsea have got that kind of money and, you know, they just see a Scottish internationalist?
Yeah, but if there's a much better goalkeeper than Craig Gordon kicking around for less than 4.5 million quid, would they not go and buy him?
Possibly, aye. I think they paid, who's the boy that went to Bournemouth for Chelsea, I think they paid about 6 or 7 million for him from Stoke, and, you know, so just shows you. Aye. I mean, it's what do you want? Do you want a guy that can make the saves like Gordon can? Or do you want a guy that can't make the saves but can kick the ball like De Vries apparently can? You know, so I know what I'd rather have.
Another thing about De Vries, and it's maybe about what the manager's comfortable with in that particular player, but the one thing I felt about De Vries, who we brought him in because allegedly he's better with his feet than Gordon, he went a lot longer than Gordon with his kickouts. He went a lot more direct down the middle of the park.
Yeah, he would find where the halfway line meets that kind of corner, if you know what I mean. Yeah. Whereas we're kind of halfway, he's hitting it sort of, you know, 35, 40 yards max out to that sort of touchline. So yeah, I think we all would possibly like an upgrade on Craig Gordon, but you know. Is it a priority if it's going to cost more than what you're saying, $4.5 million, when we've got a central defence and a right back position that clearly needs improved?
I suppose it depends. I mean, one of the things I used to think under Strachan, and it's maybe been the case this season as well, I often think, you know, when people are looking at, well, we haven't scored as many goals this season, so they look at the creative third of the pitch. But sometimes I think, even if you're not letting in goals, I mean, we've only let in 23 league goals this season, I think it is. I think sometimes that a poor defence can have an impact on the creativity of the midfield. If you've got, as we do, a midfield that, you know, there's not a midfielder in Scotland who gets in our first 11, right? So,
well, some would argue against that, but I agree with you.
I'll get on to my McGinn gossip in a minute. There's not a player in Scottish midfield in Scotland who gets in our midfield, and there's not a creative player in Scotland who gets in our final third, right?
No.
So if that's the case, we should be scoring a bar load. So I do sometimes wonder, as I say, I thought this under Strachan, that if the midfield has less confidence in their defence, then the midfield will take slightly fewer risks in their positional play because they're not as confident. You know, in Ronnie Dyla's first season, for example, when we've got Van Dijk and Denier, well, if you're a midfielder knowing that you've got Van Dijk and Denier behind you, you feel you're a bit more confident about pushing up further up the park.
Yeah.
And if you're a winger, you might feel a bit more confident about playing further up the park because you've got those two. So you're more likely to get something more creative out of the middle of the park, I think. If those players have got confidence in what's behind them, and maybe you'll get a more passive passing and a more conservative midfield play if they're not quite as confident, particularly when teams are pressing high against us, if they're not quite as confident about their teammates behind them.
Yeah, I think we've had quite an unsettled backline. I think we've been unsettled all over the park, to be honest, all season. I record a lot of games, and certain games I keep, and the telly was shite a couple of nights ago, and I was watching the 5-1 at Ibrox for last season, and I watched the cup final again, and what I recognised for the two games was the passing and the interceptions for Lustig, Boyata, Simunovic and Tierney. They barely gave the ball away, their tackling was on point, you know, Boyata was taking control and telling people to come in or telling people to push out and stuff like that. There was just more authority at the back, which allowed the midfield to sort of push on where Armstrong would push on or McGregor and Sinclair would push on that further. I think because we've been so shaky at the back, like you say, I think Brown's more liable to sit back and try and cover a bit more. The guys that are playing sort of where Sinclair and Roberts played last year out wide, they're dropping back that wee bit more. So we're actually starting to create further back, you know, and it's just by the time we get to the box, we're hitting a wall a lot of the times. Like you said as well, the defence is pretty much on a par goals wise conceded as last season, but we're something like 40 goals down.
Yep.
On the striking areas. I mean, Dembele's been out and in a lot of the season with injuries. Griffiths has had injuries, and I don't think Edouard is a lone striker. I think he plays better as a partnership or just off a main striker. So we've not really had a settled side all season, and yeah, I think it's sort of contributed to a lot of the up and down performances. You know,
although if you remember last season, there was periods of time when, I mean, that's why we signed Edouard, because there was periods of time last season when both Griffiths and Dembele were out at the same time.
Yeah, because I think there was a Hearts away, we won 5-0. I think we played Sinclair through the middle and Patrick Roberts just in behind, and we absolutely ripped him to shreds.
Yeah.
Which I've always felt Roberts probably could play as a number 10. I think he's got the ability of Tom Rogic. He's I think Rogic's really graceful and gets past people as if they're not even there over a sort of 10 sort of metre burst. I think Roberts is, you know, he's a bit more wanting to take players on and stuff like that. So I think Roberts could play that position, but he's not even getting a chance at the minute. He's only getting 10, 15 minutes to make an impact, and I don't think Forrest has been at it as much as he was in the first sort of period of the season.
So, I mean, in terms of goals from last season, the number of goals that Sinclair scored last season and compared to this season, Sinclair has scored one goal this year.
Yeah.
And I'm just having a look through just as I speak to you. Yeah, he scored two goals against Hibs in the 2-2 game in December, then scored the following week against Hamilton, and then scored against Brechin in the Scottish Cup. So, Jesus, compared to last season, that is, Sinclair scored three goals, two of them in the one game. Sinclair scored three goals since November, and two of them were in one game. And his goal before that was a penalty against Motherwell in the league game in November, where it looked like we were going to lose our unbeaten record.
Yeah. I think the thing that worries me about Sinclair is he's had this type of form before, you know, where he has a great season and then he struggles to follow it up the next season. I think he was good for the first few months of the season. Remember the Astana game, he was really good, a couple of goals in. But I think sort of November onwards, he's definitely fell off the map.
Yeah, I mean, it must be a real dilemma if you're a manager, because you know from what he did last season, you've got a good player, you've got a guy who can score you 15, you know, if you're playing a 4-2-3-1 or, which, you know, in other ways you could consider a 4-3-3, and you've got three up front. If one of those three is scoring you 15 goals in a season, last season, and you know that the only reason he's not doing it is lack of confidence, it must be really frustrating, because you'll be thinking the only way to get his confidence back is to get him scoring some goals. Get him to score a couple of good goals in a game and he'll start feeling better about himself. But you're not going to do that unless he's playing.
Yeah, and if he's not playing and not playing well, then his confidence goes down even further. So,
yeah,
you know, it's a vicious circle. Scott Sinclair on form plays every week for me, but at the moment he doesn't deserve to be on the side. It's just, and it's hard to get him in there. I thought he might have played the last game at the Cup semi, but I think it was Mark and yourself mentioned McGregor would probably play in that position. People, there's two scales on Twitter, you know, there's people saying get rid of him and all that sort of stuff, and that's just, it's ridiculous. I think if we can get Scott Sinclair, if he wants to be here and he wants to stay, and we can get him back on form, then he's definitely a player worth keeping, that's for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, it's actually a thing that, you know, people go, oh, get rid of him, and people getting all annoyed with him. He's not intentionally not playing well.
Yeah, it's the same as with every time there's a mistake at the back, it's blame Boyata, but don't say anything about Ayer or Hendry. I don't know, I don't get that, you know.
Oh, I'm starting to notice more and more people having their issues with Hendry.
Oh, I'm right at the front of that queue. I made my point straight after the game that I said he was a terrible player, and I get absolutely bombarded. But if you search Jack Hendry and Celtic in the same sentence on Twitter, you'll find that I'm not alone. I don't see it. And I know people are saying, how can you judge a guy after this many games? But I just don't see it at all. I described him as the home bargains, John Stones. I just don't think he's a good defender at all. I think he gets caught unaware, wrong positions. His passing's not great.
He wears the tightest shorts. His shorts are really, really tight. and quite high waisted. He's obviously got the Simon Cowell preference on high waisted stuff.
Did Wigan not get rid of him just not that long ago, and he ended up at Dundee for?
I think he was in the Celtic Academy, and then we let him go.
Yeah,
and then he went. I mean, again, you know, the counter argument is, well, we're terrible in this country for judging someone when they're 22, 23 years of age, and then that's it. When, you know, they've got a whole career of learning ahead of them, and, you know, as a number of, you know, look at James Forrest this season, it's his best season ever. And that's the difference that Brendan has made. So I'm reluctant to completely write a player off, but he looked okay. I mean, not great. Looked okay in the first couple of games, but he wasn't really tested.
I think his first game he lost to Kilmarnock.
But then I would have a bit of sympathy in that because
Boyata went off, didn't he?
Boyata and Ayer both went off.
Yeah.
So he was the only defender.
I wouldn't judge him in that game, and I don't think he was the worst player in the park at that game anyway. But yeah, and I mean, I'm not one of these people that's, you know, when Ncham wasn't really hitting any kind of heights, I was defending him to the hilt because I could tell and I could see that there was a player in there. You know, I could tell just in flashes that there was something there that would eventually come out, and I think a lot of people are starting to see, you know, the quality that Ncham's got. But I think Ncham definitely needs Brown playing well alongside him, that gives him the freedom to be as creative as he can be, and he gets a lot of space. But I just, Jack Hendry, he's definitely not a right back.
No.
So, if Lustig's injured, why are we not playing the other right back that we have? Now, people will say, Gamboa's shite and, you know, whatever, but the only two games I can remember Gamboa playing pretty poorly in was against Barcelona away, which was his debut, and away to Bayern, where he was up against Kingsley Coman, who's probably the quickest player in Europe. So,
do you know, I was thinking about Gamboa today, and I was thinking that it's really odd, the lack of game time he's had under Brendan Rodgers, but the games he has played have been like against Barcelona, against Bayern, you know, on the disproportionate number of Celtic games against the best quality teams we've played.
He played in the defence that got the point over in Gladbach as well. He was on that team. I think the last time I remember him playing in a league game, I thought he was one of the best players in the park. I just don't get it. I don't know what's went on. I don't know if there's a clause where if he plays a certain amount of games that we have to pay more money, and Rodgers has made up his mind that he's not worth the extra money, whatever that may be. Now, I've had people, when I've criticised the defence, I've had people telling me, you know, oh, the defence going forward should be Ralston at right back, Ayer, Hendry and Tierney. And honestly, that would just scare the life out of me going into the Champions League qualifiers, because I think that defence would get absolutely roasted.
Well, yeah.
I mean,
again, he's only 19, and I think Aya, you know, can become a great player.
Yeah.
I do think Aya, particularly for a centre half, dives in too much.
Yes.
And what I really notice is, I mean, he's only 19, so, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying so he's shite. I'm just saying that's a part of his game that he needs to learn not to do. You know, if you read any comments from top European centre halves, they will continually talk about, if they're making a tackle, it means that there's been a big mistake.
Yeah.
If they're having to go to ground and make any sort of major tackle, because they're out of position and they haven't read the game, or somebody else is out of position. And it's not just that Aya dives in, it's the many times I notice Aya diving in out near the touchline, which then gets you thinking, so what's our defence doing that we've got a centre-half making a sliding tackle on the touchline? Because centre-halves should be in.
I made this point the other day to somebody when I was criticising the defence, that Aya dived in. I think 5 minutes went up for injury time against Hibs, and I think we were in the first minute of that injury time, and John McGinn's running out of play with the ball, he's going nowhere, and Aya dives in, doesn't get the ball, fouls McGinn, and McGinn basically takes about 2 minutes off the clock. You know, he's pulling his hamstring or pulling his calf, and, you know, he's killing time. He's doing what he should do in that situation, but Ayer's given him the opportunity to do that, and I'm thinking, why did you dive in? Just stand him up. He's not going anywhere. He's probably going to run out of play, or he's got, at best, he's going to get a throw in. And I think he did it against Candace as well. He dived in on the touchline, and it was probably the only chance Rangers had in the first half in the semi. So he needs to cut that out of his game. You know, you look at Atletico Madrid last night against Arsenal, all they do is stand them up. They don't, you know, and they block. I mean, we're talking another level of defending here, but I suppose people always say defending's an easier part of the game. It's easier to destroy than create, and he definitely needs to cut that diving in, slide tackles out, unless it's like, you know, Morelos running through and goal, like that one where he's no choice but to.
Aye, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying a centre-half should never dive in, and again, I'm also saying I appreciate he's a young player, so I'm not saying, oh, he's crap, we should get rid of him or anything.
No.
I'm just saying he's 19 and he's a centre-half and he's got great attributes at times of taking the ball out from the back, and he's, you know, his huge physical presence, and he's a good footballer, and all those things. I'm just saying, for him to then become a centre-half that we should be playing every week, one of the things he's going to have to do is stop diving in so easily.
Yeah. I mean, we've definitely seen a massive improvement. I think the first game I remember him in was the Astana game, away. He had Beaton right beside him, and, you know, it was a shambles that night. But from that point to where he is now, he's definitely night and day. So, you know, whereas I see Aya potentially growing into a real top centre-half eventually, you know, if he can tweak a few things in his game. In Hendry, I don't see it. And, you know, I'm starting to think it's about a waste of money. So that's just my opinion. I'm not saying that because I want the boy to fail. I want every player that we sign to, you know, make a mark. But you've just got to call it as you see it. Yeah, and that's just the way I see it.
So we didn't beat Hibs on Saturday.
Good goal by Edward.
Edward came on and he took his goal well.
If Dembele's injured, does Edward start this Saturday?
Well, he scored. There's an argument he scored, so he deserves.
Because Griffiths was terrible. Again.
Yeah. Edward's got a good physical presence. He took the goal well. Obviously, the press are desperate to hype up McGinn.
Yeah, there's a section of your support that are desperate for that as well.
So, what I know is that Hibs think McGinn's leaving. and McGinn's agent has agreed terms in principle with an English club for McGinn.
Okay.
And has
Championship,
not,
I'm assuming.
What?
Championship,
I'm assuming. I don't know. I just know it's an English club. And I also know that he's not had direct contact from Celtic, so Celtic haven't agreed terms.
Okay.
With McGinn. And I also know that Rod Petrie and Peter Lawwell hate each other. And particularly, Peter Lawwell thinks Rod Petrie's an arsehole and can't stand doing business with Rod Petrie. And Rod Petrie, and then Rod Petrie doesn't like doing business with Peter Lawwell and always puts the price up.
Yeah. Well, Rod Petrie's the guy that once, you know, shared everything, didn't he?
Yeah.
To level the playing field, so. Yeah.
So that's where we are with again. I'm not
a fan.
He's an okay player, and he should be in the Scotland squad. But if you were to say to me, Celtic midfielders are Brown, Incham, McGregor, Armstrong, Rogic, Kouassi.
Yeah.
Does McGinn get in front of four of them?
No. And that's the argument I've been having with people is, I've put it out there just a couple of days ago. I basically said that there's nobody playing in Scottish football that we could sign that will improve our best 11 or improve on our best 11. So the signing of McGinn, for me, where does he play? Now, some people have said to me, well, if Armstrong leaves, then it could be a replacement for him. So on that basis, I looked at some stats based on Armstrong and McGinn. So I dig out my notes here, so I've came prepared. McGinn has had 167 appearances since he started. 91 at Hibs and 76 at St Mirren. He's only had 16 goals. Now, Armstrong has played slightly less. He's had 162 appearances, 92 at Dundee United and 70 at Celtic. And he's scored 20. Let me do my sums here. He's scored 41 goals. I mean, that's a. So Armstrong scored nearly three times the amount in slightly less games. I think Armstrong's more more energetic. I think he's more dynamic. I think he's a better goal scorer. I just think he's a better all-round player. I don't think McGinn's passing is particularly good. I've seen quite a few of his passes at the weekend against us go straight out of the park and no find the mark. I think McGeoch's the guy who pulls the strings there with the passing. I think he's just a high-energy sort of, what's the word, water carrier? You know, I just...
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong.
He'll put a graft in and he'll harry and he'll hurry, but at European level, he'll just get people passing around about him.
We could sign him, he could come in and he could prove me wrong. However, from what I've seen, he is your stereotypical, gets back to the point I remember making before, you know, everybody else, or before lots of people started to understand what Callum McGregor brought to the team. I remember, you know, in, you know, two seasons ago under Ronnie Dyla, when people wanted rid of McGregor, saying on the podcast, you take Callum McGregor and you stick him in a Hibs team, he will be the star man.
Yeah.
And he will start getting people demanding that he get Scotland games. And that's what you've always got to be wary of, that playing for that team, you know, playing for a lesser team with lesser expectations and with slightly inferior players around him, he looks like maybe better than he is.
McGinn, I don't think, I just don't see it. I just don't think he would add anything to our midfield, and I don't see who drops out. I think we've got better players. And I think
that is my point. He's a Scottish player, he's really good.
And yeah, you might look at it and go, well, he's a good player. But you've got to look at it in the context of the Celtic squad and say, right, okay, so he's a reasonable player and he's pretty good for a Scottish player, and he's one of the best players in Scottish football outside the Celtic team. But he's got to fit in that team, and he's got to get in the team ahead of four of Brown, Armstrong and Cham, McGregor, Rogic, Kouassi.
Yeah. See, the kind of signings I'm looking for Celtic to make is where Lustig then becomes the backup, you know, and we've got a much better right back than Lustig. And, you know, we bring a centre-half in where Boyata becomes the backup or Simunovic is the backup. And we've got a much... I want us to improve on what we've got.
Yeah, the quality of player we bring in is better than that's there.
I think Liverpool had that kind of thing back in the late 70s and early 80s, that they would always try and bring in two players that were better than what they had, as what's perceived as their best 11. You know, that was... And I think that's the route we should go down. I don't like the thought of uproot branch, everybody, you know, half the team leaves and we bring in six or seven and we try and bed them in. I'd rather have a gradual two or three, you know, maybe leave and two or three maybe come in, and that's kind of the business done. But I'd rather those two or three are of a quality that's going to up the overall of the 11, rather than, you know, just filling numbers and putting bums on benches. I don't think, personally, I think what I've seen of Kouassi, I think he's a better player than McGinn, but he's just not getting a long enough run in the team.
Yeah, and the other thing, what age is McGinn? 23, 24, something?
He's 24 in October.
Right. Kouassi's 19, 20.
Yes. I thought Kouassi in the Zenit home game was outstanding. And he looked like a decent passer of the ball as well.
Yeah, I mean, I just think he made one mistake away to Zenit, and so he was, you know, largely at fault. You know, people blamed De Vries, and De Vries was at fault for not stopping the shot, but Kouassi was at fault for letting the guy get the shot away.
Yeah.
And he's not played since.
Which is... I don't get Rodgers somehow. He's starting to remind me a wee bit of Martin O'Neill, where he starts to just keep reverting to a tried and tested, or a tried and trusted. You know, we eventually, under O'Neill, we had the same team practically for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, like...
We bring in Janinho, for instance, and he didn't cut it for a couple of games, and then he was never seen again.
Oh, I know. And in fact, I always remember one of Janinho's best games. We played away at Motherwell, and it was... And I thought, yeah, this is him. He's finally come on to a game here. He's really dictating play, and he got taken off with, like, 20 minutes, half an hour to go, and we had a European game midweek, and you thought, I can't remember who we were playing, and you thought, oh, right, okay, so he's been taken off here so that he's getting saved for the European game, and I don't think he was ever seen again.
I know. It's just, so I'm starting to, there's certain players that are falling into that bracket. You know, I think Forrest has been as good as he was at the start of the season, and he's obviously been nominated player of the season. I definitely think in the last couple of months there's been a tail off. When he played against Rangers, I didn't think he had a particularly great game. He didn't get past John once, but, you know, he did set up the first goal, so I'm not going to be too hard on him. But I just think where Roberts should have maybe come in, but is it a case of Roberts is off-ski and we're not signing him long-term, so we may as well keep going with a guy who's been in possession of that position, you know? I don't know.
I don't know, and I did wonder that, so... Let's talk about the game on Sunday. So if we win that, we win the league. So
we now have to win because Aberdeen won 2-0 tonight.
Yeah. So if we win that, we win the league. So our opponents have been in the news recently. So first of all, I just don't get... it's not for me to complain about them being thick as mince, but I don't get their signing policy that they're going to sign a 36-year-old goalkeeper and a 29-year-old guy, whatever his name is, in the English Premiership, from the guy from Burnley, a 29-year-old on a 4-year contract.
I think this is Arfield, isn't it?
Just I don't understand. I really don't understand. As I say, it's not for me. You know, if they want to be daddies, they can be daddies. Yeah. But I don't understand, if you're trying to create something, you've not got much cash, then Celtic's the exemplar model in Scottish football of buying talent young, adding value to them, selling them on at a profit that starts to boost your bank balance, so that we're in a position where we get £30 million in the bank. It then means that we can afford to not qualify for the Champions League without having to go and sell every player, and the manager can plan for the medium to longer term, right? So you look at that and you think, right, okay, that's what we need to be looking at. So let's go and sign a 29-year-old on a 4-year contract and a 36-year-old goalkeeper. Makes no sense to me.
No. Well, I mean, I do think McGregor's a good goalkeeper.
But he's 36.
But I didn't realise he was 36. But is De Vries not 36?
Aye, but he's our number three now.
Yeah, he's our number three now. So, I don't know. Is fathering him away? Are they going to get money for him? Maybe
I have no idea. But if you're fathering him, you're going to be thinking, Is this guy? Unless this guy's coming up for a season or two, just to, you know, because he wants to come back home for retiring. Why are they going and signing a guy who would want to see himself getting in the Scotland squad?
Well, Fotherham, he didn't play against Hearts, and they had some other guy in, I can't remember his name.
Oh, that's right, he might be injured for Sunday, apparently.
So I don't know whether Fotherham said, you know, I want to go back down the road, get maybe a team in the Championship or something. But the Hull manager came out the day and said that McGregor's not even spoke to Rangers yet or something, so he's been at Hull all week and he's not been at Ibrox for talks, so I don't know. McGregor's a good keeper. I think they'll get a couple of years out of him probably.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if he's not, and it's part of they seem to be stuck in a model of in 1986 when the old Rangers were shite. They went and signed Graeme Souness. They signed some big name players who were established, experienced players, and they also were Trump-esque in their bombast in the press. And they just talked any old shite. Nobody questioned it. And every time there was a big game coming up or there was tickets to be sold, they just went out and, you know, the hover pitch and all that sort of nonsense. And I know, you know, Jim Traynor's an old-fashioned newspaper guy, but it's not just, everything about their strategy seems to be revisiting that. So, you know, let's go and sign, you know, let's talk about signing players before big games.
Yeah.
3 weeks ago, just before they go and play us in the Cup, they come out with the, we're going to get a really, really, really good manager who knows what he's doing stuff, right?
And that was like 3 or 4 days before the semi. It was to do with our season tickets.
So they've gone and done it again before this league game.
Yeah.
Of the Stevie Gerrard stuff. Now, apparently the press conference today, Murty's saying, well, I've been told that if I win the next 4 games, I've still got a chance of getting the job full time.
And he said he's something along the lines that he's not going to give this position up that easily, kind of thing. Not that he's got a choice, but, you know.
Again, it's just all over the place. So, again, the things that I've heard are that Walter Smith has been agitating that they go back in for Derek McInnes because he thinks that McInnes is starting to give the signals that he's fed up at Aberdeen because he can't do any more. And he also knows that West Brom have been sounding out McInnes for the West Brom job.
Yeah.
Equally, Willie Miller really doesn't like McInnes, and Willie Miller's been agitating up in Aberdeen for that it wouldn't be the end of the world if McInnes moved on because he can't win any of the big games.
Well, Aberdeen, as far as I'm aware, they've got their next guy lined up, which is Jack Ross.
Yeah, so again, back when when it looked like McInnes was going to get the Rangers job, I know someone who knows Jamie Lynfield very well. Jamie Lynfield said, chuffed to bits, I'm going to get to go back up to Aberdeen. because McInnes is getting the Rangers job and Jack Ross is getting the Aberdeen job and he's taking me with him. So all of that's going on in the background. I know, and I do find, apparently the Record said something today about maybe Stevie Clark's a liar or something like that. Because Stevie Clark has said he wasn't offered the Rangers job.
Yes.
But nobody gets offered the Rangers job,
no,
or the Celtic job or any other. Nobody, I mean, I know Scotland were shite at trying to recruit O'Neill, Michael O'Neill, but nobody gets actually physically, so there's the job. Your agent gets a phone call saying, would your guy be interested in having a chat and sounding out about the Rangers job? And his agent says, I'll go and find out. And he speaks to Stevie Clark, and Stevie Clark says, no, I'm not interested. Or Stevie Clark says, what would he be talking about? And his agent goes back and says, what sort of salary? Were we in this ballpark? No, he's not that interested. So Rangers can then have approached Stevie Clark, and Stevie Clark can turn around and say, no, I've not been offered the Rangers job. And he's not lying, because he wasn't offered it. He was asked, exactly, would he be interested in chatting about it?
No, he's been asked through a third party, so he can turn around and say, without lying, I haven't spoke to anybody at Rangers.
I know that. I also know that Neil Warnock approached Rangers and they knocked him back. They said we only want a manager who's got eyebrows. So he got knocked back, and apparently he owns a house in Dunoon.
I didn't know that.
No, and he's a big hunt.
Well, he's been on Talksport quite a bit, you know, chatting. And whenever Alan Brazil gets him, he mentions, you know, they talk about Celtic Rangers games or whatever, and he always says that he's had an affinity for Rangers. So I get that, you know, that he's from afar, you know, he's probably maybe liked Rangers in the past or whatever. So
I think he's under pressure, what they need for a couple of seasons, actually.
Possibly.
Get themselves organised.
He's said before that if Cardiff go up, he doesn't want to manage in the Premier League. I think he's basically said in the past that it's above what he's capable of, you know, as a coach. It's too high a level for him. He's basically said, you know, that the Championship is what he is an expert in, getting teams organised, getting them in a position to get up into the Premier League. Because I think every Premier League job he's had, he's been sacked or got relegated.
Yeah, but I think sometimes the getting promoted out of the Championship is a bit of a poison chalice.
Yeah.
Because you'll go up and then you'll not do very well, and the fans will then start getting agitated, and you'll get fired, you know.
Yeah.
But So I know that. I know that Neil Warnock, and I know that they genuinely have spoken to Steven Gerrard, and I know that Gary McAllister hasn't denied that Stevie Gerrard spoken to him about him being his number two if he was a manager.
Yeah. Which kind of makes sense, you know.
So they have spoken to him, and I also know that apparently Stevie Gerrard hates Brendan Rodgers.
Does he?
Aye. Really strongly dislikes him.
I didn't think that.
Neither did I, but I found that out today, that he really dislikes Rodgers. It's to do with when his career finished.
The way he left.
Thought he would get a job. Pretty much the type of job he's now got at Liverpool.
Yeah.
But Brendan Rodgers didn't get that organised for him, and he blamed Rodgers for that, not anybody else in the structure, because when Rodgers left, he then got the type of job that he wanted. So he's not a Rodgers fan.
Well, Brendan would have known that the minute things started hitting, you know, a rough patch, then there would have been calls for get Rodgers out, bring in Stevie Gerrard. So I think he eliminated that whole, you know, scenario. So I know there was an issue the way he left the club, but the way he spoke about Brendan Rodgers on TV, you never ever got that impression. He was doing the analysis for the Astana game at home where we won 5-0, and I think there was pictures of them meeting in the tunnel and stuff like that well before the game. And then, you know, he spoke about how good a coach he is and da-da-da, but just never gave that impression that, you know.
No, so I got that from two very reputable people today telling me. So
surprised at that.
Yeah, so again, talking all that, but what do you see the? So that's all my that's all gossip.
That's all your hot gossip.
That's all my gossip. The other gossip I've got just before we go on to the game is, remember we were interested in that Iranian,
yes,
striker last season.
I can't remember his name, but
I can't remember his name.
Was he playing in Holland or Belgium or something?
He was an 11, 12 million pound player. I don't know if he still would be. Can't remember his name. But he was pretty much lined up if we sold Dembele. And so again, I've heard from a few people that we are again speaking to his agent.
The problem, I'd love to keep Dembele, and he always seems to turn up in the big games. But the problem I have with him is he's never fit. He never seems to have a run of games. You know, he played so well against Rangers, and then he's out the following week against Hibs, and now he's potentially doubtful for this Sunday.
So what do you see the team being on Sunday?
Well, I think it's down to, you know, whether Lustig and Dembele's fit. Because if they were fit, I would basically say go with the same team as the semi-final.
Okay, so right, let's go through the three teams. First team, they're fit.
Yeah.
So you're just going to pick the cup semi-final team?
I think that's the way he goes. I don't think he drops Forrest for Roberts. Although I would put Roberts in. I think bringing Forrest on for maybe a last 20 would be better than Roberts. I think that's. If Lustig and Dembele are fit, I think that's the team we should start with. Just because I think out of everybody, they're the most informed players, you know. Okay. That's what Rogers probably perceives.
So if Lustig's not fit, what's your defence, or do you change the system?
I'd throw Gamboa in, but he's not going to do that. So, and I don't think Jack Hendry should play there because I don't think he's a right back. So, does he bring Simunovic back in and put Ayer back out there where he played at Ibrox? And that didn't really work either. It's a problem position if Lustig's unfit and Gamboa's not even considered.
Okay, what would you do?
What would I do?
Yeah.
Well, personally, I would put Gamboa in, regardless of the lack of game time.
Okay, so what do you think Brendan will do?
I think he'll bring in Simunovic and put Ayer to right back, or Baljata to right back.
Okay, and if Dembele's not fit?
I think he should start with Edward.
And do you think he will, or do you think he'll go for Griffiths?
I think he actually might start with Edward, if I'm honest. I think he might have been pretty annoyed at Griffiths. I could see that substitution coming against Hibs, an absolute mile off. I tweeted it at the time and people were coming back to me saying, are you mental, or, you know, why would he do that? And then sure enough, within 2 minutes, he brings Griffiths off, because I think he was annoyed at me the last time we played Hibs. I think it was I think it was a semi-final he brought him off. You know, so I think he'll go with Edouard. The boy scored. He scored against Rangers at Ibrox, I think, at Celtic Park. I think he'll find, you know, it may be a bit easier for him than, say, Ibrox or Hampden on his own.
Okay, so what's the score going to be?
I've been thinking 3-0. I think we'll just, in the end, overpower them. I think it'll be more competitive for longer. But I think we'll be one up by half time, and I think we'll probably score 2 goals, sort of 70 minutes onwards.
Do you think they'll play more like Hibs did?
I don't think they've got the players to do it. That's the problem for them. I think they'll press more than they did, but I don't think they'll go full Hibs, because I think they've still got it in their head that we'll just pass around them.
Okay, so you're going for 3-0, we'll be champions. So the final question then is, when all that happens, are we going to be looking at an empty Rangers end for the last 10 minutes, or are they going to try and do some sort of defiance that we're going to stay in the stadium longer than them type thing, or do you think it'll just be, they'll stay, they'll watch the team, and then they'll leave?
I think I think they'll probably start to disperse, depending on the scoreline, you know. If it is 3-0, sort of last 10 minutes, I think you'll start to see the end emptying, to be honest. That's, I don't think they'll want to see, stay and watch us party to a title.
What do you think? Final option. James Strathclyde Police and their continual not being able to judge football supporters and all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
James Strathclyde Police will do that thing of saying the away fans have got, you know, with 10 minutes to go, the away fans have now got to stay in the ground.
No, because I think they'll think that they'll just piss them off even more and they'll end up on the park. I think there'll be a heavy police presence around that corner. Usually when there's a goal or a corner or something, you know, you see them all pouring round just anticipating, you know, people running on the park. I don't think anything will be allowed to happen. I don't think they'll keep them back either. I think it'll be like, there's a picture for the 5-1 game for Celtic Park last season where the final whistle goes and the Rangers end is completely empty and the rest of the stadium's nobody's left.
Exactly. So who's going to score our 3 goals in your 3-0?
I've got a feeling Tierney might score.
Tierney?
I don't know. I just have a feeling that it's just one of those days, one of those games. You know, I think Tierney will score. I think one of the centre halves might score. So I'm saying Boyata will score, and I think Edward will score.
Wow, you've got quite a selection of scorers. Yeah. I think you get some really good odds on 3-0 with those 3 scorers.
Aye, probably.
I'd be putting a bet on if I were you.
Better odds than you gave the BBC for 5 goals.
I tell you, the other thing then, if that happens, it increases the likelihood that Rangers will not finish second.
No.
Because that'll put them on 65 points, and obviously Aberdeen will be on 68. If that happens, having said that, Aberdeen has still got to lose to us. But
and them.
First place gets 3.18 million. Second place gets 2.28 million. Third place is 300 grand below. Fourth place, £2.4 million below. So there's 300 grand between second and third, which, you know, when you're in the position the Rangers are in, that matters.
Well, I mean there's a scenario where Rangers could finish fourth and then end up relying on us beating Motherwell for them to get into Europe. So
it's 500 grand between fourth and second.
Yeah, that's his wages.
So
I've got a feeling they might finish third. I think Aberdeen, I think the way it's sitting just now, I think that's the way it'll finish. I think Aberdeen might see it out and finish second.
Right, well, the most important thing is we win on Sunday.
Of course.
We win nicely and comfortably. I mean, don't get me wrong, it would certainly be quite dramatic and funny if we scored a last minute 1-0.
Oh, what's the scenario you want? Do you want you beat them comprehensively, or do you want the Nakamura style, you know, versus Kilmarnock last minute?
No, you know, only ever with hindsight is that, only ever in the moment is that, in the moment of the winning goal, is that a good thing? No, absolutely. My ideal scenario would be inside the first minute, we go one up. And we are a bit like the, you know, some of the 6-2 game and stuff like that. It would be really nice if we were 3-goal in the 5-1 game under Dr. Joe. It'd be really nice if we were 3-0 up after about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
4-0 by half time. And then the second half was just laughing at the. How good would laughing again? How good would it be if they were done, half time, they were 3-4-0 down, and then, do you know what would be fantastic? And I know this is a sort of a wish list of stuff, how good would it be if we were 3-0 up by half time, scored a fourth after, say, 50 minutes, and then scored a sixth in, say, the...
I know where you're going with this.
In about the 60, 65th minute. And then they just went. You know, if you did something like that, where we scored the fifth goal,
yeah,
we're half an hour to go, they would just empty. That would be fantastic. That'd be a brilliant. That would be the optimum thing for me.
Yeah, they'd be so far and gone home, you could probably let Celtic fans that didn't get a ticket inside their seats.
Yeah, exactly. You could just say, you could be an announcement, actually, as we're away celebrating and concentrating on the celebration for the fifth goal, you could be a wee announcement. You could open the doors and the stewards could just whisper to Rangers fans and say, look, if you all leave now, we'll give you a tenner on the way out the door and we'll charge people a tenner on the way in to come in and celebrate Celtic winning the title.
Aye, sounds like a deal.
Yeah. Yeah. And obviously, being a skin club, that would be right up their street. So
definitely.
Yeah. So you're going to go for 3-0. I don't know what the score will be. I just know there's going to be a show in the Glasgow Celtic will be there. So 3-0 is fine by me.
Yeah.
And with that, I will say, Stephen Ray, thanks very much.
Thanks very much.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
Well, life is pretty hectic at the moment and it's pretty challenging for me to get all these podcasts done. All these podcasts, I'm not been doing that many, but I'll do my best. And if we beat Rangers on Sunday, I'll look to try and do a podcast on Sunday night with somebody who will, I don't know, whoever. Somebody, I'll find someone to do a podcast. Anyway, enough of me. That was me with Stephen Ray. We were talking about the Hibs game, talking about some changes that need to happen, slight frustrations with some of the performances this season, and then talking about the Rangers game and all the rumours that we've heard kicking around. So we hope you enjoyed that podcast. There'll be more along soon, as I say. Enjoy the game on Sunday. This is me, Harry Brady, saying goodnight and God bless. Goodnight.
All the while, in this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love. Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine.